Tuesday's front page, the Supreme Court threw out the largest employment discrimination case in the nation's history. The court sided with Walmart and against as many as 1.6 million women who work for Walmart. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says he'll allow political parties other than his own. We'll look at why the reaction was skeptical and how politically connected lawyers are benefiting from the foreclosure crisis. I'm James Barron. All the news that's fit to podcast begins right now. Our top story says the Supreme Court threw out a sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart. Times reporter Adam Liptak says the 5-4 decision makes it harder to bring large-scale bias claims against big companies.
It was a case brought by as many as 1.5 million women who said they suffered discrimination in pay and promotions. The Supreme Court didn't rule on whether there was in fact discrimination. The question in the case was whether it could proceed as a class action, whether all these people could band together in a single lawsuit. And a 5-justice majority of the court said no, said the claims were too different. They didn't have enough in common, that these women worked in very many different stores under many different managers, and that they had not come forward with enough evidence to show that they had enough in common to band together as a class action.
Times reporter Adam Liptak. The case split along ideological lines, with the 4 more conservative justices joined by Justice Anthony Kennedy. At age 77, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah says his get-up-and-go comes from nutritional supplements. It turns out he spent much of his career in Washington helping the $25 billion supplement industry, and it's given him thousands in campaign contributions. Many public health experts say Hatch has almost single-handedly blocked regulators from keeping dangerous products from going on the market. That includes supplements that are illegally spiked with steroids. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says he'll allow political parties other than his own. Assad appeared on television for the first time in 2 months. He said he won't step down. He said he wants a national dialogue that could usher in change in a country his party and his family have dominated for years. Times reporter Anthony Shadid says the reaction was skeptical.
In contrast to popular wisdom, there's long been an opposition to Syria. The Muslim Brotherhood fought the government in the 1980s, and Syria has a long-standing leftist and secular opposition. But Syria's government over the past 40 years has been relentless in repressing dissent, and that repression has prevented the opposition from coalescing and providing a concrete alternative to the government. There are a host of opposition figures in Damascus. Figures like Michelle Kilo, Atif Dalila, have held tentative talks with government officials since the uprising began. But even they say that they will not enter into this formal dialogue that Mr. Assad outlined unless the crackdown ends.
Times reporter Anthony Shadid. Tuesday's front page says the Sudanese army has gone on a rampage to crush rebel fighters in central Sudan. The army and militias that are on its side have bombed villages and burned down churches. UN officials say they've also executed local elders. Thousands of armed rebel fighters are resisting the government's order to disarm. Now the army is even threatening to shoot down UN helicopters. Sudan already detained 4 UN peacekeepers. The UN says they were forced to stand in front of what it calls a mock firing squad. Here in New York, politically connected lawyers are benefiting from the foreclosure crisis. They're the ones who are getting named court-appointed receivers to look after distressed buildings. Lawyer Mark LeBeau has made $350,000 overseeing one problem building. He's the husband of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's top aide. People used to say the internet was the place where anonymity flourished. Now it seems it's the place where anonymity dies. It's more and more likely that every embarrassing video or every funny anecdote will go public with a name attached. Last week, a Metro North Railroad commuter tangled with a conductor. She was identified after another passenger posted a cell phone video of the incident on YouTube. Then she was ridiculed by bloggers. One called it the latest episode of Name and Shame on the Web. Inside Tuesday's Times, the murder rate in Puerto Rico is soaring. So far, there have been 522 murders there this year. That's already outpacing last year's total, which was the second highest on record. There were 22 murders for every 100,000 Puerto Ricans last year. In the rest of the U.S., there were 5. Governor Luis Fortuño deployed the National Guard to try to curb the killings. The extra patrols haven't helped. The police say nearly half the homicides are connected to drug trafficking. Former Russian oil company owner Mikhail Khodorkovsky is spending his second prison term in a penal colony bordering Finland. He's already served one sentence in Siberia. He was convicted at a second trial in 2010, but many Russians say the case marked a return to Soviet-style justice. Khodorkovsky has been incommunicado since June 10th when he boarded a prison train in Moscow. The Obama administration extended a moratorium on uranium mining in the Grand Canyon. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar announced the six-month extension to prevent new claims in a million-acre buffer zone around the canyon. He's waiting for the results of a study that's focusing on potential environmental harm. It's okay for the fly in the wall to be, well, the fly on the wall. A federal appeals court said so. The case was about theflyonthewall.com. That's a website that tracks financial analyst ratings changes. Several big banks claimed that publishing headlines about their stock research amounted to stealing intellectual property. The court disagreed. That was a big victory for internet companies that repurpose content from elsewhere. Here in New York, two technology executives were charged in a city payroll scandal. The two executives worked for Technodyne. It played a central role in the city's troubled automated payroll project. They were indicted on federal fraud and kickback charges. Technodyne halted operations earlier in the month. The two executives, who are married to each other, have gone back to their native India. Another key figure in the case has pleaded guilty and is cooperating with investigators. That's our preview of Tuesday's Times. For a look at all of these stories, go to nytimes.com. You can send your comments about the Front Page Podcast to podcasts@nytimes.com. That's podcasts with an S on the end at nytimes.com. From our newsroom in New York, I'm James Barron. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us.